Welcome to the Gut Goddess Show, your weekly podcast that helps you create one happier, flatter, and more joyful belly and life. I'm your host, Kezia Hall, a nutrition and functional medicine geek. And fact about me, I used to be a half marathon runner. Ask me the last time I went for a run, and I can't remember. So let's get on with the show. Welcome to this week's show, and this week we're going juicy and we're going deep and we're talking about things that maybe people don't really talk about, but in true Kezia style, I'm talking about them. We're going to be looking at pelvic floor, and I've got an awesome woman who I'm interviewing who is going to debunk some of the stuff that we think about pelvic floor, share what it has to do with you, whether or not you've had a child, whether or not you're pregnant, why pelvic floor is important for men and for women. We talk about orgasms and why that's really helpful, how that impacts your health. We talk about constipation and how pelvic floor can impact constipation. We talk about getting to know down there and loads of other juicy stuff. It's a great, great conversation. I really encourage you to have a listen. Make sure you listen all the way to the end. Lisa shares some really great information with us about what pelvic floor is, how we can support it, how we can get help around it, and loads, loads more. I think it's this conversation, actually, I was saying to Lisa at the end, is a conversation that's not often had. I've not heard many people talk about it, and it affects so many women. So many women I know, after they've had kids, can never jump on a trampoline again or pee themselves when they laugh. And it's become quote unquote normal. And that isn't actually, from what Lisa said, normal. That is not the way that our bodies are made to be. And it affects your confidence. It can impact your sex life. It can impact your activity level and so much more. So that is the topic of today's episode. And it's such a good one, guys. It really is. But before we dive on into that, I want to let you know about two awesome things. Number one, thank you for some of the reviews you guys have been leaving. I honestly love reading reviews. And one the reviews this week, I'll just read a little snippet from it, was said, I'm really pleased to hear a holistic diet and health podcast coming from British Woman. Yay! Great things about the show, that Kezia is so down to earth and the advice is very attainable, easy to understand, and evidence-based. Although I've personally been following a vegan diet for over a year, Kezia acknowledges that health and diet is very personal. What suit one might not suit the other. And I love that. And the review goes on. You can have a read. And is that I love that. I don't follow a vegan diet. But the aim of this podcast is that everyone feels included. Everyone can learn from it. And that you listen and learn to and learn what to give your body. So that review, thank you for leaving that. That made me very happy. And in my current pregnant state, almost brought a tear to my eye. Everything's very emotional right now. So, you know, leave a review and it might make me cry with joy. You can think of that while writing. To leave a review, it's pretty simple. What you need to do is go to your podcast app, whatever you use for that. So iTunes, maybe on your phone, your smartphone, you'll have a little podcast thing. Or you can use whatever it is that you listen to podcasts to on your laptop. You'd search for the Gut Goddess Show. Then you'll see an option for ratings and reviews. You click on that, you'll see lots of reviews come up, and then there'll be a section that says leave a review. You just click on that, you give it a star rating, and you just can leave a couple of comments about it. And I really, really appreciate reviews. This podcast costs me time and money to put out into the world. It's something I do because I think education is really important. I really want to debunk myths. I want to help you overcome the overwhelm, but it does take resources and time and all these different things as part of my business. And so you leaving a review is just a really nice way of saying thanks and letting me know what you want to hear on the show. I do this podcast for you. I want this to be something that is a useful resource. So I want to hear from you. I want to know what the things you want to hear more of, what things you want to hear less of, and how I can serve you on a week-to-week basis, how I can help you, what the things you want to get educated on, because that's what I'm here for. I am. Another exciting thing is I want to let you know about, as a podcast listener, I am offering podcast listeners only some clarity calls. So if you head to supernaturallyhealthy.org/ clarity, you can book in a free 30-minute consultation with me where we drill down and create some kick-ass clarity around your health goals, how you can get there, what might be getting in the way, and just bring a whole dose of ease and simplicity and an understanding of what is going on with your health. So if you haven't had a chat with me, then book in a call. I know it can feel intimidating to chat to someone you listen to a podcast with, but I'm really a normal person. I'm just sitting here on my sofa in my yoga gear. Not that I've done yoga, of course, but it's just comfy being pregnant. I'm just a normal person, and I'd love to chat with you in real life, IRL, as the kids say online. It's just lovely to connect with people in real person, in real time, hearing your voice. So supernaturallyhealthy.org/clarity. They're free. You can book in. I'll ask you a couple of questions, and then we can help you create one awesomely healthy life. So that's a couple of things from me. Otherwise, I want to get on with the show and introduce the wonderful Lisa T. Lisa is a female health and holistic core restore coach who supports women with mindset, movement, nutrition, from motherhood to menopause. She specializes specifically in pelvic floor and core strengthening, rehabilitation, and confidence building to move with ease and joy, whatever age or stage of womanhood you are at. You can find out more about Lisa at optimum-health.me.uk, and all the links to find out more about Lisa are in the show notes. So we are going to get on with the show and start talking about this juicy topic of pelvic floor. So welcome to the show, Lisa. It's wonderful to have you.
Thank you for having me, Kezia.
And tell us, before we dive into all the juicy things that we're going to talk about today, whereabouts in the world are you?
I'm in Lincoln, in Lincolnshire.
Ah, very nice.
It is very rural, very pretty. A little bit on the grey side today, but we'll let it go.
Oh, yes. Yeah, no, it's definitely a little bit grey here. I'm ready and waiting for spring. It's just not quite sprung.
Not quite. There are signs. We'll hang on to that.
I did see some snowdrops the other day on my walk. I live near fields, and I was like, oh, it must be coming. It must be.
Yes. I think we're all saying that, aren't we? It has to be here.
I know. It's true. And before we dive into some of the nitty-gritty goodness that we're going to talk about, a very important question first is, what food are you loving right now, Lisa?
Let's think. That would be chocolate.
Do you have a preference? White, milk, dark,
salted? I am a bit of a tart, I have to say, when it comes to chocolate. I'll take whatever's available. I do like my dark chocolate, though.
I love that, a chocolate tart. I've never heard that phrase. I'll take anything. I don't discriminate.
Yeah,
colour, just, size.
Yeah, it's in nobody's interest for me to avoid chocolate.
That's so true. I know. I think post Easter, I think we're probably all feeling like slight chocolate overload. I was looking at all the chocolate left over this morning, just staring at me, being like, probably shouldn't eat you for breakfast. I'm not sure I feel my best. You know, yes. Set me up for the best of days. So I was like, in the cupboard you go. You'll last for a little while. I'll save.
That's it. Make it last. Enjoy it. Yeah.
And tell us a little bit about, so by now people listening will know a little bit about your kind of official bio of what it is you do, but tell us, how did you get to this place, and how did you get to the point of where you are now of doing this work with women? What's been your journey and your process to that?
Well, it started really after having my own children. I had pelvic dysfunction with both of them, although first time around we didn't know what that was. And so I retrained after having my second little boy, and retrained as a personal trainer, and started to work with postnatal ladies, and just realized really how inadequate the training was, and how little it actually covered. So started going deeper and encountered a pelvic floor issue of my own during some an intense training period. And it surprised me really, because you tend to associate pelvic floor issues with ladies who have just had their babies and think it's just to do with weakness, but it can be the other way around as well. Highly trained people can have real pelvic floor issues, and it just kind of fascinated me. But I really noticed a drop off in care just in the just short of 3 years between having my boys, in the support that there was for women after having their children, physically as well as mentally. And with more women, such as like myself, having children later in life, so they kind of finish having their children not long after they hit perimenopause. And again, huge psychological as well as physiological changes in their minds, their bodies, but also their pelvic floors. And there's just no support for that either. So at school, we're taught about puberty and the transition our body goes through, but nobody ever talks about menopause. And just so many women feel such a big change in their lives and put it down to them being weak or not coping and stuff like that, without actually recognizing this huge transition that their body is going through. And just knowing about that, whether it's kind of the changes happening postnatally or premenopausally, it gives them that power to be able to support their body and actually feel good about what they're doing, rather than that negative self-talk about not being able to cope and not being able to do anything. So I just think it's a huge step for women to understand what's happening in their bodies. And I just feel very privileged to be able to provide that information and support for them.
Brilliant. I love that. And before we dive in, tell us a little bit of, so if someone's listening and they're like, pelvic floor, is that just stopping wee when it comes out? Like, tell us a little bit of what you mean by pelvic floor, what that impacts in terms of yourself and body.
Okay. Feel free to interrupt me as well, because once I get going on this, I get a bit passionate.
I understand. It's like me talking about poo and periods or something.
Yeah, well, yeah, same here. But people think of the pelvic floor as something that's down there, because again, we don't like to use words. It can be covered up. So although we're embarrassed about what's going on, we're not going to mention it. But I almost think of the pelvic floor a little bit like an organ, because it's muscles, it's nerves, it's blood vessels, and it provides like a sling or a basket that spans the underneath of the bones of our pelvis. So it supports everything above. And it should work in tandem with what's above it. And I think that's really, really important, because people think when they have a pelvic floor issue, they just need to tighten and squeeze or lift and squeeze. But actually, we need to understand what sort of issue is happening in the pelvic floor, and then look at what's happening above and below it. So when you're breathing, is that diaphragm moving with the pelvic floor and against it? Is that causing you to leak urine when you're sneezing or coughing, laughing or jumping? All these sorts of things. So it's a very dynamic structure. It's not meant to just hold stiff and firm. It's meant to flow, ebb and flow in tandem with the diaphragm up above it. So yes, it can help us to stop the flow of wee, but it's not the place to do your pelvic floor exercises when you are doing a wee. Yeah. And the simple reason for that is that if you're stopping the flow of urine, you're interrupting the letdown reflex for having a wee, but also it can lead to incomplete emptying of your bladder, and that can cause urinary tract infections. So you can just stop it the flow of urine to check if you can feel that tightening, but it's not the place to do your pelvic floor exercises.
That's worth knowing, because I sometimes would do it when I'm just having a wee, check that everything's still working.
Yeah. So there are other ways to kind of test that. And I use a lot of visualizations, because with everything I do, I think the mind is the huge connector between our thoughts and our actual movement. So the pelvic floor basically supports our whole torso. It supports the organs above it. Wow. It holds the vagina, the bladder, and the rectal canal in place as well. And it's a dynamic being in terms of when we're moving, it needs to lift and release as well. So it's not just something to tighten and squeeze.
No, and I think probably for most people listening, that's probably one of the best explanations they've ever heard of pelvic floor. Because most of the time we do just think it's about stopping, starting wee, And I suppose another myth, which you can kind of speak into, is that, you know, looking after your pelvic floor, you just need to do that around pregnancy or, you know, the 3 weeks, 6 weeks after postpartum. Do you think that's the case, or do you feel like pelvic floor impacts someone's entire life and needs to be looked at? I mean, I can guess probably what you're going to say, but
both men and women all the time. Hmm. And I think that's another myth. You know, it just gets drilled down to women, but men have a pelvic floor as well.
Yeah.
Structurally, theirs is different because they only have two openings in their pelvic floor, the anus and the urethra, whereas we have the vagina as well. So structurally, ours may be considered a little bit weaker. So during pregnancy, there's more pressure on the pelvic floor because of the increased weight above it from baby, placenta, the growing uterus, the amniotic fluid, all of that stuff is extra weight. So another myth is that ladies who've had a cesarean still need to look after their pelvic floor because they've carried that extra weight through their pelvic floor the whole pregnancy. Yeah. Now, also during pregnancy, the position of our pelvis changes because of the bump growing out front. And the position of our pelvis changes the pressure down into our pelvic floor as well. So, and what we also know is that working on your core and floor during pregnancy not only makes for an easier labour, but a quicker recovery afterwards as well. Mm. So it's not just the 6 weeks after. Working on it beforehand can be really useful in lots of ways. And then beyond the end of the 6 weeks. So we know that it takes at least a year for our body to recover from pregnancy, which makes sense. You know, it took 9 months to adapt and for our baby to grow. So it's going to take at least that for it to get back to recovery. Now, for some ladies, it can take a lot longer. I've had my record actually for a lady doing my Stronger Mummies program, working on the basics of reintegrating everything. She'd had twins and they were 30 years old at the time we worked together. Wow. So, you know, it's never too late. And I think that's a great message to give, because on average, women wait between 6 and 10 years to deal with pelvic floor issues.
Goodness, that's a long time.
It is a long time, because in that time, a lot of things can have progressed, perhaps to the point where they can't be rectified without surgery. So the earlier you do something about it, the better. Yeah. Now, once we get to perimenopause and our hormones start to change, particularly estrogen coming down, that changes the elasticity of our tissues, including those in the pelvic floor. So I like to describe this like your favorite top or trousers, or, you know, maybe handbag, whatever it is. But when you first buy it, it's really vibrant in color. The material has some stretch in it. So if you wash it, it comes out exactly the same. Over the years, the color fades a little bit. It's not quite so stretchy. Once you've washed it, it's a bit more baggy. It doesn't retain its shape. A bit saggy. The same for our pelvic floor. So in those years where those hormonal changes are reducing its elasticity, the more we can do to support it through our alignment, our breathing, but also how we activate and release it can make a really big difference. And that's to our strength, our continence, but our confidence as well.
I love that. So it's for those of you listening, if you have had kids in the last 30 years, this is relevant to you. If you had kids more recently or are pregnant or in postpartum, obviously, you know, this is relevant. And even for those of you that maybe aren't pregnant, aren't planning getting pregnant anytime soon, I can't tell you actually how many of my one-to-one clients, how many of them actually probably also, along with all the other health issues they have, they also have pelvic floor issues, and issues around, you know, overactive bladders and incontinence, you know, and they're in their 20s, they're in their 30s, they've not had kids, they've not, and there's a lot of embarrassment around talking about it. There's a lot of, I suppose, shame that people feel, and women especially can feel, around their bodies. So if you're listening, I would encourage you, if you do feel like this is something that you could be struggling with, whatever stage that you're at, to not be embarrassed about it.
Not
actually,
at all.
So many women and men, this is an area of that we don't talk about, and therefore people that we don't have the knowledge. You're right. No one's ever spoken to me about pelvic floor in terms of growing up and just the body anatomy and keeping strong. You know, I first started to learn a little bit about it was years ago when I went to my first like Pilates class, and that was when they started talking about like zipping up and, you know, I was like, what am I zipping up? I don't understand.
And I think that's a great point, actually, in terms of zipping up is one cue for activating both your abdomen and your pelvic floor. But you kind of got to capture people's imaginations. I always like to do it with a little bit of humour, but to help them to really connect with what area of their body they should be feeling something in. And I'm a big advocate of using touch in all of my coaching sessions, because it almost closes the circuit between the muscles you want to focus on and the thoughts that you're needing to generate to get that working. So, and that can be externally, so simply hands on your hips or pressing into your belly. But of course, when it comes to pelvic floor, as your alternative to doing it when you're doing a Wii, you can insert fingers into the vagina and just give yourself something to squeeze onto, but importantly, something to let go of. You know, the relaxation and release of the pelvic floor is as important as being able to tighten and squeeze as well.
Which is a good point, actually, because most, if people are aware of it, they'll mainly be aware of it in the tightening, strengthening, squeezing side, but actually also being able to completely relax and let go. Someone was telling me about they were doing like stretching exercises pre-pregnancy or something. I'm not sure that's to do with their pelvic floor, but anyway, but just I think the element of touch and not being weird about touching your body. As you say, either you just put it on your abdomen. Often if I'm doing like Pilates exercises, that's like a trigger for me. I just put it right on the bottom of my pelvis to like remember to not, you know, not arch my back or not like keep a neutral kind of positioning, because it's just a nice trigger for my brain. But it's encompassing that, because and I think you're right, the language that you use as well in terms of the visualization, because to begin with you've just got to actually know what it is and feel it and know which, you know, is what's the back, what's the front, what's the pink, what's, it's not just peeing, not peeing, it's actually from my understanding, which is limited, is it's much more diverse and kind of robust than that.
I mean, if you sit on your chair now and have a wiggle so that you're even between both buttocks, you'll feel sort of the sit bone inside each buttock.
Yeah.
So if you think of those in the left as the left and the right anchor points for your pelvic floor, and then if you slouch like you would sink into your sofa, you'll notice where your tailbone is behind you.
Yeah.
So then come back up to sit evenly. You can put your hand low down and you'll feel the front of your pelvis, that pubic bone.
Yeah.
So they are almost the four corners of attachment for your pelvic floor.
Helpful.
So you can think of almost trying to draw your sit bones together. You'll notice your tailbone is lower than the front of your pelvis. So one of the visualizations I like is to think as you're breathing out, there's an escalator going from your tailbone forwards and up through your pelvis as you lift it. And then as you breathe in, you let that escalator come back down. Okay, with control. So there are no bombs dropping as you let it go. You've got to be able to control both directions. But I think, again, a lot of people, when they start to active their pelvic floor, they don't know how hard to squeeze. Most people assume they've got to squeeze the life out of it.
Yeah.
But we don't. And this is, my logo is actually cherries, because cherry is one of my favorite visualizations. And again, if you're sitting firmly, as you take a breath out, imagine you're taking hold of a cherry with your vagina. Don't try it with real cherries though. Draw it up inside.
We're saying, people.
Yeah. So take hold of it lightly, draw it up inside. And then as you breathe in, lower the cherry back to the chair and let it go. So the reason I like using the cherries is because a whole cherry has to come out. We are not making cherry juice.
Yes.
And just sitting on a chair, it gives you something to lift away from, but something to relax back down to as well.
That is. That's a really nice visualization and trigger, actually. Just think a little cherry, lightly picking it up, drawing it up, and then lightly, you know, taking it back in one piece.
Yeah. And it draws on what we know in terms of a difference between continent and incontinent people. We know that continent people close the openings first and then lift, then they lower and let go. Whereas incontinent people tend to try and do it the other way around. They tend to try and just lift without thinking of closing those openings.
Okay.
So it's just using those cues and visualizations to draw on what we know from science.
That's fascinating. And if someone, how would someone know, other than potentially just doing some incontinence, how would they know if there is pelvic kind of floor issues going on?
There's lots of different ways, and it depends very much on what the pelvic floor issue is. So you touched on incontinence, and that can be caused by a lax element in your pelvic floor, or it can be over tightness. You may have heaviness or a feeling of dragging in your pelvis. Okay. So, and this is moving almost towards stages of prolapse, and there are lots of different types of prolapse as well, because as I mentioned, the pelvic floor supports the bladder, the vagina, and the rectal canal in the pelvis as well. So if any of them are kind of leaning one way or the other and starting to come down, that's because the pelvic floor isn't quite doing its supportive job.
Yeah.
So it could be a form of leakage. That could be when you sneeze, cough, laugh, do anything unexpected like that. It could be persistent low back pain that's not being explained by anything else, because it's very much related.
Yeah.
Going back to pregnancy, we know that virtually all women will experience some degree of abdominal separation, particularly in the third trimester. Mm-hmm. Everything being equal, plenty of rest and relaxation, yeah, right, after birth, that usually sorts itself. But where it persists, two-thirds of women that have diastasis or abdominal separation mm-hmm. will have some form of pelvic dysfunction as well.
Okay.
So anything that is not normal for you could be a pelvic floor issue, and it's worth getting it checked out. So it's just noticing, you know, we naturally want to Google what's normal.
Yes.
But it's knowing what's normal for you. You know, if you get particularly heavy, and some people notice it more around the time that they're having their period. Everything feels heavy through there. They don't feel able to kind of control their urges in quite the same way. And if it's just at that time of the month and you have particularly heavy periods, it's not necessarily a pelvic floor issue, but just tune into it and be a little bit more aware of how things feel. You know, does it feel heavy in your pelvis when you go to pick up something heavy? You know, maybe that's just you're shopping, maybe it's your child, something like that. Do you get constipated often? Because constipation is a huge amount of pressure on your pelvic floor as well. So all of these things, so much of our life affects our pelvic floor. But again, another one, particularly for new mums, if you're not sleeping much, your pelvic floor isn't getting any rest. And this, the first time I ever went to a pelvic floor physio, I found it really fascinating. So I was having a play with it and literally lifting my head off the pillow activated my pelvic floor.
Oh, wow.
So as soon as you are moving, your pelvic floor is activating and releasing. So if you're not getting rest at night or you're restless in bed, then equally that pelvic floor isn't getting rest and relaxation either.
Yeah.
So, you know, then going and doing sort of really heavy training or lifting heavy things, are you able to control it through there? Now, equally on the training side, this is the last one, I'll stop. But on the training side of things, particularly common with ladies when they come to lift something or do something they find tricky, is they hold their breath.
Yes.
As a way of feeling like they're stabilizing their core as they're doing that. Yeah. But actually what we're then doing when we're holding our breath, we're stopping the movement of the diaphragm, and we tend to bear down and out into our abdomen and pelvic floor. So when you go to do whatever it is, your lift, and you're holding your breath, you may be pushing down into that pelvic floor. So if you're experiencing leakage when you're at the gym, just check that you're breathing. And this is what I do with my coaching. We go through the breathing strategies, we get the pelvic floor moving with the diaphragm and everything in between, and then we get it activating but also releasing in time with the movements that you're doing.
Wow, that's fascinating, because I can imagine a lot of people listening like, oh, I've struggled with constipation for ages, or every time I do a squat at that class at the gym, I have to make sure, you know, I have my tenor lady, you know, because a little bit of weed comes out, or if I'm, you know, running up, I don't know, whatever it is. I think that it is fascinating, and it does make total sense from a body point of view and an anatomy point of view, in terms of, you know, everything that I do with clients is all about how the body works as one thing.
Yeah.
You cannot isolate and treat something in isolation to anything else. And I think that's One of the downsides of our conventional medical system, it has many upsides, but one of its downsides is it treats things in complete isolation often. And that's how we've been raised in our culture around medicine and healing and lots of other things around those lines. Whereas actually this is all, you've got one body and these are all different things that are linked. And I loved what you were saying as well about how this is common with people, but it's not necessarily normal. And it's about figuring out and being aware of what your normal is. Because I can't tell you, out of all of my friends who've probably had children, I'd probably say like it's normal or it's common, for most of them to have, from what I can tell from our, girl chats around trampolines and, I couldn't do that because whatever X, Y, and Z. It's normal for there to be apparently pelvic floor issues, whereas it's, from what you're saying, it's not normal. It can be common.
It's very, very common. So one in three women will experience incontinence at some point in their lives. It's very, very common.
Yeah.
But that's not normal.
Yes.
And, from my point of view, people say, well, it doesn't really matter, does it? And I think adverts for tenor ladies, discreet pants, all these things are normalizing the behavior, making it more accepting.
Yes.
But actually what we know is women start to alter their behavior when they're having to use these products or feel like they need to. So they stop moving as much. Now, again, whether it's postnatally or premenopausally, if we're reducing the amount of activity and movement that we'll do, that has huge effects for weight maintenance, for our heart health, for our bone health, for our mental well-being and these sorts of things. And that's all coming from pelvic floor issues.
Yes. So, and it does affect then your confidence, I imagine.
Massively.
And, going to the beach and lying by the pool and you want to go to a new hot yoga class or whatever it is, you meet someone new or you start having sex or I don't know.
Yeah.
It's impacting so many different things. And there's a lot of things that we do that we think are normal in our bodies and they're common, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they're normal.
They're normal. No.
I think we probably find that with people that we work with. And often it's because people are a bit too embarrassed to say something or to come to someone and say, look, I feel like I'm getting incontinent and I'm in my late 30s. I don't feel like I've had kids 5 years ago. I don't, this is affecting my life. And I think that is such an important thing to think about. So for those of you listening, just being aware of the things that the symptoms and the things in your life that you've decided are normal, actually maybe some of them maybe are, but some of them actually taking some time to just rethink that. Yeah. They might become normal for you because you've gotten used to them. I know for a lot of my health issues, they were normal. Diarrhea every day was normal. Being depressed was normal. Having thrush was normal. Having no periods or crazy periods, that was my normal, but it wasn't A, good, B, fun, or C, actually what my body, it was my body asking for a bit of support and TLC, a lot of support as the case was.
Yeah, absolutely. That's it. And it's listening to those signals that your body's given. And I think you're right that most women feel embarrassed by it, that somehow their body has failed them.
Yeah.
But actually your body is doing an amazing job at supporting what you're trying to do. It just needs a little bit of help from you.
Yeah.
But I also think a lot of women don't ask for help for fear of what that help entails. Going to see a female health physio, in our heads, we almost imagine it like a smear test. It's going to be embarrassing, it's going to be uncomfortable, and it's going to hurt.
Yes.
But actually, it's not. And certainly the female health physio that I work with is just the most gorgeous lady. All clothes stay on, nothing happens until you're ready. And it's that conversation to make you feel comfortable. And she supports you all the way through. It's not painful at all. And the benefit of doing that, and all female health physios use different tools, but their approach will be broadly similar. And actually, I can share with you an article about what happens when you go to see a female health physio.
Oh, yeah.
That's useful.
Yeah, I'll put that in the show notes, yeah.
And But the thing is, they use what we call biofeedback, which is just using your other senses to help you to connect with that pelvic floor. Now, for some, that might be in terms of closing and tightening and lifting. For others, it might be relaxing and releasing. So again, it's important to see a female health physio for us to understand what's going on with your pelvic floor.
Yes.
Because if you are in the camp where your pelvic floor is holding on, as was, that was when I first encountered an issue training for a run, I was doing some hill sprints, and it was around the time of my period, so it's a bit heavier through the pelvis anyway, and just felt like a thud. And you think, oh, what's that? I knew what it was. So I went to see my female health physio after that. And it wasn't that it was weak. It was that I'd been holding on because I coach Pilates. I do core and floor all the time. So I'm inadvertently doing it along with all my clients. And it just got to the point where it said, I've held on for so long, I can do no more. Poof. Yeah. You know, so I have to work on making sure I release and relax. Yes. And it's important to make that distinction.
Yes.
Now, from my point of view as a coach, even if it's something like prolapse, I don't do internal, so I can't diagnose you. But working with a female health physio, if we know what has prolapsed, so is it the vaginal walls? Is it your bladder? Is it even the rectal canal? We can then use positioning to help gravity put things back in the right place and then activate the muscles so that your body is getting all of the support rather than you just saying, come on, hold on.
Yes. And for those listening, a prolapse is basically when something on the inside starts to come on the outside. So you can have a vaginal
prolapse. It can be, yeah.
And it's not always quite that dramatic, is it?
No, you can have an internal one.
Yes. Yeah. So, but it's that sort of coming, almost like coming away slightly,
yeah,
at a basic level,
yeah,
of doing it. And that can happen in lots of different ways, just in case someone's like, what's a
prolapse? Yeah. Yeah.
You might not want to Google image that.
Yeah. Yeah. And what I would say is do have a look at your undercarriage. But a lesson that I learned early on, do not squat over the mirror, because that's a lovely relaxed position for your pelvic floor. So everything is going to look very, very relaxed, and it might be a bit of a shock. So it's better to do so, maybe lay on your bed with a mirror between your legs and have a look at it there.
Yeah.
So you're not bearing down into a relaxed pelvic floor when you're looking at it.
Oh, that's a good tip.
Yeah, because you might scare yourself if you do it the other way.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's the thing. Different positions release or tighten your pelvic floor. So that's how we can use exercise to help with whatever's going on for you.
And so I imagine a lot of this stuff also really would relate to orgasms as well.
Yes. And orgasm is brilliant exercise for your pelvic floor.
Yeah.
So make sure you get one every time.
And I was listening to another podcast the other day that was talking about this process of autophagy, which is basically when the body itself will kind of clear up, kind of self-eat. That sounds weird, but it'll basically do natural detoxing and natural cleaning up of the self. And it's a really effective biochemical process anyway. And some of the research was women who have 200 orgasms a year basically turn on this natural detoxification, cleansing, whatever cellular process. And I was like, brilliant.
I mean, what that might be is through orgasm, we get more vaginal mucus. And then that reduces as we go through perimenopause, which is that combined with the reduction in estrogen is what can make some women feel dry and itchy around the whole vaginal area and the perineum as well. So the more orgasms stimulate more vaginal mucus, which helps to moisturize it and keep the bacteria, our good bacteria in our vagina, living. So it sort of generates the health as well.
And would an inability or real difficulty to kind of reach climax and orgasm, would that also potentially be a sign of kind of a pelvic floor issue? I know it can be because of many.
Not necessarily. I say often that's more of a psychological link as well. But again, with the female health physios, they can help you to connect with that area of your body. Again, it's a very intimate, very personal area that people don't want to think about. So if there are issues down there, finding somebody that you're comfortable to talk to, as well as being just being prepared to get to know your own body a little bit more as well. In the complete privacy of your own space where you feel comfortable is really, really useful.
Yeah. And I think that's really important, because then I think kind of female orgasms is also another thing, quote unquote, that people can talk about as normal in terms of either it not happening, it being really hard, whatever. Yeah. And as you're right, I think that there is lots of factors. A lot of them are often psychological or there's different things. I think it can be a bit more broad ranged. But as you say, just getting to know your body.
Yeah.
Really important, being comfortable with it and having lots of orgasms. I think sometimes women don't think of that in terms of having health benefits, but there's so many health benefits.
Like, oh yeah,
explained. It's also great for your immune system, it's great for your hormonal health, there's so many benefits,
just all the pleasure receptors in the brain that get hit as well.
Yeah, so that's your action if you're listening to this podcast. go and get that sorted, take that off.
Yeah, absolutely. Don't be afraid to ask.
Yeah, exactly.
Didn't quite get it that time. Let's have another go.
Round two. Come on, honey. Go on again.
But I think women being brave enough to have these conversations is really important with their partners. You know, so many women feel different, particularly after birth as well, that they will just avoid sex. Yeah. But having the conversation with your partner, maybe getting them involved in your rehab. So I mentioned that you can insert the fingers in your vagina yourself, but maybe that becomes part of a game and you get your partner's support for it as well. Yeah. Not least because in having that conversation, you're accepting what your body needs. Mm-hmm. And rather than being something that you want to shy away from, you become proud that you're doing something to help yourself. Yeah. And actually it's starting to feel good.
Yeah,
because you're breaking down those barriers that we tend to put up for ourselves.
So true. I love this conversation. It's all good things. We've talked about constipation, orgasms. This is great.
Well, if we touch on constipation again, so those that have constipation, massive weight to the pelvic floor. And of course, when we are constipated and we feel like we can go, what we tend to do is push down, scrunch down to try and force the motion out. So in doing that, we tend to tuck our tailbone under, which puts the pelvic floor into a more tightened position.
Okay.
So it's a bit then like you are bearing down into a tightened structure. So actually, if you've got a potty stool at home, if you've got a toddler, just their little toddler step, if you haven't, grabbed two toilet rolls and put them up on end and pop your feet on those, lengthen up and stick your elbows on your knees with a nice long back. So that opens and relaxes the pelvic floor.
And can make a big difference. I remember starting to do that a few years ago because I'd read, you know, just in terms of alignment. So I just have, it's like an IKEA stool.
Whatever, yeah, perfect.
Just by the thing. And especially with being pregnant, I've noticed, I've never really struggled that much with constipation, but since being pregnant, if I've not kept on top of like water and those kinds of things, I've actually found a bit more constipated. If I'm staying somewhere else and I'm just having to do a normal toilet position or whatever, it makes a big difference actually. And it does feel like you're having a poo and evacuating all that crap, literally, it makes it feel a lot more kind of thorough and easier to do. Yeah. And it's really simple. As you say, you don't even need a stool. I never thought of just using some toilet rolls stacked up.
Because then wherever you are in the world, you know, generally if you're in a hotel, there's always a couple of spare. So just use those. Say it puts the pelvic floor in a relaxed position. It also puts the rectal canal more in a straight line. Yeah. So usually I sort of display this with my little portable pelvis, but when your pelvis is tucked under, you are literally pushing poo uphill because of the shape the rectal canal goes into. And then the final thing you can do is moo when you poo. Well, you've got to join in then, Kezia.
I will.
So feet flat, bottom evenly rooted, okay, and just do a grrr for me.
Grrr.
A little bit more emphasis.
Grr.
Okay, so just notice how that feels in your pelvic floor as you do that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, now try shh. Yeah?
Yeah.
Notice how that feels. Okay, now try a moo.
Moo.
So there's no right and wrong. So some people prefer a grr, some people prefer a shh, and some people prefer to moo.
Totally going to try all three. And
yeah.
See which one works.
And the reason being, again, I talked about that connection between the diaphragm and the pelvic floor. Mm-hmm. Again, when we're kind of straining to pass a bowel motion, mm-hmm. we will hold our breath to bear down.
Yes.
Making one of those noises, you are exhaling. So the diaphragm moves up. Okay. It just takes, by opening the glottis with a noise as well, it just allows some of that pressure to escape. So you're not building up pressure in the abdomen or down into the pelvic floor. You're keeping everything relaxed, and it just helps things to come out a little bit more easily.
Oh, that's genius. That makes a lot of sense, because you do, if you're constipated, you tend to scrunch, bear down, like a lot of tension, a lot of pushing, as opposed to just actually releasing tension and letting it go. So
yeah.
This grr, you can try grr,
shh, or moo. Yeah.
See what kind of helps whilst being in that kind of knees elevated, kind of rectum aligned going forward. That's super helpful, because a lot of the time, sometimes with clients, that, you know, there can be lots of elements to constipation, but if literally for those of you listening, it might be a case of just pooping in a better position,
yeah,
staying a few moos.
Yeah, absolutely. I wish I'd known that after childbirth, because
yes.
That was a scary time.
I know. I remember my sister telling me, like, your first poo, she said after it's like, your first poo after you've given birth. It's like, she's like, it's terrifying.
It is so scary.
Like, okay, Jess, she's like, it's like the weirdest thing. I was like, right, okay, I'm mentally prepare myself for that. But I'll have my stool, I'll have my moos.
Yeah, you're shirts, sorted.
Or girls. You know, plenty of water around. I'll let you know though when it happens.
Yeah, please do.
I'll let you know which one works for me. But like, I'm more of a shush than a moo. I don't know why.
And this is the thing, it's very individual. There is no one approach, and that's why I have so many different visualizations for everything, really. You've got to find what connects best for you.
Yes. Yeah, no, I think that, and I think that is, that goes with, I suppose, a lot of things that we're talking about. And no, in terms of finding, you know, if you do want to work with a pelvic floor physio, finding one that you really connect with and works well with you, you know, all of these, and anything we're talking about, food, nutrition, anything here on the podcast, there is elements and there's principles and there's, you know, biological kind of facts that we can use and utilize and be aware of. But it really is, everyone's body is just so different, and the more I work with clients and people, the more I'm amazed at how different that is, actually. Yeah. And it really is, that's where we kind of have to take that personal responsibility to learn about us and
absolutely
learn about our bodies and our minds and our muscles. You know, some of you might be just constantly clenching your pelvic floor and there's almost, you can't let go, and others of you, there might not be, you know, that ability or that kind of strength that's needed, and everyone is really, really different. So thank you so much for this conversation, Lisa. I feel like we've covered loads of really useful things, like whether it's in terms of, you know, pelvic floor around pregnancy, around constipation, around, you know, so much different stuff. And if you were gonna share like two or three like real basic things that we can do to support our pelvic floor in the weeks to weeks or days to days, what would those things be?
The first one would be breathe.
Mm-hmm.
So your pelvic floor doesn't work on its own, as we said. It has to move with the diaphragm above it. So your pelvic floor exercises need to tie in with our breath. Second thing would probably be sleep. Because again, if you're not resting, then neither is your pelvic floor. And I think the third thing would be listen to your body. Okay, it's natural to feel embarrassed, to feel scared, any of those things. But anything that you do to sort it out is going to help you. It can't hurt you.
Yeah.
So face those fears, seek for help, even if they come through your channels, Kezia, and you know, just find a way to ask the question, how do I find a female health physio? What should I look for? Those sorts of things. Just do one thing today that's going to help you move past that fear and start to do something to help your body.
I love that. Those are really simple and applicable things, and that have lots of other benefits. You know, sleep helps your pelvic floor, but it helps your blood sugar, it helps your hormones, it'll help you maintain a healthy weight, it'll help your sanity. And there's a
definitely. You know, and there are times when we get so busy, we just can't focus on the simple things. We look at the detail. But just taking that step back and think of breathing, resting, what help do I need, can actually create that time and space you need to feel better about yourself in more ways than one.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And where can people, if we want to dive in more into this and get more support around it, where can people listening find you and find the programs that you run and things like that?
My Facebook page is My Optimum Health, on Instagram as that as well. I'm on Twitter periodically as Pelvic Princess. I'm not a big Twitterer.
No,
I don't get it really. But also through Kezi, you can access my website, which has a contact me function on there as well. So feel free to just ask any questions. There are no dashed questions either. So feel free to ask questions.
Well, I'll put all of those links in the show notes. So for those of you listening, if you want to find the link itself, then head over to the blog, and the actual post for this podcast will all be underneath there. And any other resources we've spoken about and different show notes and things will all be found in there. Otherwise, thank you for talking with us, Lisa. I feel
like you've
really helped kind of debunked some myths around pelvic floor, help us educate us on what it is, and also empowered us actually in terms of the things that we can do, and just, I don't know, shed a whole other layer of things maybe we quote unquote shouldn't talk about, or and actually we can talk about these things, and it's okay.
Do, definitely talk about them.
And having, I think these kinds of conversations are really powerful around, you know, someone listening might suddenly be like, oh, I'm not the only, like, it's not just me. And with any health issue, I can guarantee that it is not just you, no matter how embarrassing you think it is. It is not just
it's you. Not definitely
never,
not
never is never is
and the sooner that's it, and the sooner you do something about it, the better the outcome is going to be.
Yes, and that is the biggest thing I think about with my own health is I was so embarrassed for so long, I didn't get any help. And so if I'd just gotten help to begin with, do you know what I mean, I could have alleviated years of suffering, but it was that embarrassment that keeps you trapped. So I think it's been a really helpful conversation for us. Thank you very much.
Brilliant. Thank you.
If you think this episode is going to be helpful for anyone that you know, feel free to email it to them or share it with them or tag them on Instagram or Facebook or whatever. And if you have any questions for me or for Lisa, then feel free to get in touch either via the website or social media or whichever method you prefer. Otherwise, have an amazing week, and I will see you next week for another Gut Goddess episode. Lots of love. Bye.